This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Welcome to the Drill Down. We've got the business stories behind stocks on the move. I'm Corey Johnson with episode number 246. Well, just ahead, a giant insurer accused of fraud and the stock gets cut in half. And a $10 billion bet on apartments. And a fascinating conversation with Braze CEO Bill Magnuson, the tech company to whom AI is old hat. But first, it's sponsor time.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Braintrust, a global talent network that matches highly skilled technical freelancers with the world's most reputable brands. Braintrust has helped clients like Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Porsche, Under Armour, and more build agile tech teams fast at a fraction of the cost. Visit Braintrust.com, that's BRAINTRUST.com to learn more and get 20% off when you use our link. Braintrust.com/drilldown.
Right, I'm Futurum's Chief Market Strategist, Corey Johnson, and we have got the Drill Down. We're going to explain the business stories behind some stocks on the move. Join me on the mic today, as always, Ben Wilson. Glad to have you. Ben, you're somewhere.
Somewhere, doing something with some life that I have. It's nice. Very specific.
But what happens there stays there?
Somewhere like that, yeah.
Which city you're in.
As long as you don't give any context clues.
There you go.
Corey, what stocks are you drilling down on today?
I want to start with an amazing story, which is the story of Globe Life.
Globe Life. Sounds amazing. Trades with the ticker GL, the market cap of about $4.6 billion. Shares were down, 55% in the last week. And for the last 12 months, shares are down 54%. So it's basically been flat for a year until this week. So what's the story with Globe Life?
Well, it's a story that we've seen before, which is a short seller came out with a report about this company, showed off their research, and the stock responded by just getting just pummeled. It's an insurance company based in Texas. And after this report came out from Fuzzy Panda Research, I am unfamiliar with Fuzzy Panda Research. I have no idea who's behind the thing, but it's a self-described short-selling group. They don't reveal who they are. And they came out with this report that talks about the brokers for a subsidiary, American Income Life, which is about half of the revenues for Globe Life. And the report cites a former vice president of sales from American Income Life as a source, as well as documents, lawsuits, interviews with other employees that they don't name. And it's as we see with these things, there's a lot of work that went into this. And I haven't been able to verify any of it. So I'm just reporting why the thing went down and why the stock got hurt so much. But the report alleges that some executives at Globe Life and American Income Life made millions by referring new hires to a training program that they secretly owned. And it suggests that it's more of a multi-level marketing scheme than an insurance business or an insurance sales business. Warren Buffett and Berkshire Hathaway was a big owner of this thing, but sold all their shares, kind of dumped them in the last year. So there's a lot of weird stuff. And there's also this amazing video on the website for these short sellers detailing kind of a mini documentary detailing the culture of American Income Life. The young salespeople who boast about the cars they're driving, the Benjamins they're making. It's worth a watch. I found it kind of funny, but check out just a little bit here. And at the end, you'll see the CEO, Rick Altig, talking about one of their salespeople, and you get a sense of what this company's like.
Former employees we've interviewed told us that American Income Life sales reps forge customer signatures to write fake policies, create policies for dead people, create fake policies by signing up customers without their consent, and commit actuarial fraud by lying about whether policyholders smoke. Here's a video celebrating AIL's top grossing agent of 2022.
What a success story, right? Is coming all the way behind all year long and on the last day crushing and setting the all-time record.
They had a guy on Christmas week write $270,000 worth of business. Now listen, I've been in insurance sales for 37 years. To write a policy with us takes a good hour. I don't know how you can write $300,000 worth of business in 3 days. I mean, there's just not enough hours in the day.
Corey, that video is something else. Writing.
Yeah,
it's very clear that that's not the way business is supposed to work.
Well, again, these are allegations. We don't know. I'm reporting to you why the stock is down. I can't tell you if these allegations are true or not. But it does suggest a culture different than what I've witnessed at other really staid, boring insurance companies. It's certainly not a Warren Buffett culture portrayed in this video.
The guy with the hair and then talking about how
which guy wildly with the hair? Successful there was a lot of hair right? going on there.
It seems to me like if one were to make a parody video, it would have played out the same way.
The authors of the short report made comparisons to Wolf of Wall Street as opposed to the old insurance industry. Well, nonetheless, this is one we're going to keep an eye on.
Absolutely. Corey, what's your next drill down?
I want to look at American Income REIT.
American Income REIT trades the ticker AIRC, market cap about $113 billion. Shares are up 22% in the last week, but for the last 12 months, shares are only up 8%. So what's the story with Apartment Income REIT?
So Blackstone, the big real estate investor, is buying, taking private American Income REIT for about $10 billion. This is the largest multifamily deal ever for Blackstone, and it suggests what it suggests. It suggests they really believe that apartments are going to make a comeback here. And it's a really interesting, big swinging call. Air Communities, which is the underlying business here, owns 76 upscale apartments in coastal markets like Miami, Los Angeles, Boston, and yes, right here behind me in San Francisco. Blackstone says they're going to put another $400 million into this deal to improve the properties. And this is after they already spent $3.5 billion to take the private single-family landlord Tricon private in 2024. So earlier this year, I should say. So, it's a big swing. And in the commercial real estate, when a lot of people are thinking commercial real estate is in really big trouble. And so I had not looked at Air Communities before this deal, but it's an interesting business because it's a really strong business and it seems to have been really conservatively managed. Air Communities says their average tenant household income is $237,000. And their average revenue per unit is $2,700. So these are high-end apartments. What was interesting is even though you see building valuations falling across the board, these things are doing very well. In a recent conference call, American Income REIT CEO Terry Considine talked about how they managed their finances during the pandemic when a lot of companies were taking accruals. They weren't doing that, which will cause them kind of short-term pain in terms of their financial results. But it means that maybe there aren't a lot of surprises here. And maybe that was a clue that these guys were managing their risk quite well. And they're reporting, making it really crystal clear what was going on in their business. Here is the CEO of Apartment Income REIT.
Because we did not make accruals based on optimism during the pandemic. We were very disciplined in our accounting, and so we don't have to reverse those accruals. We're operating where any news is basically good news, and so our bad debt for the fourth quarter was zero. So net of those recoveries. Now we're not going to stay at zero for the year. I'm not trying to say that, but I just want to point out two things that you can use in thinking about the future. One is that the air customer is much less likely to have bad debt. And second, the air accounting is much more likely to be connected to cash.
So accounting connected to cash, that's a good thing. We like that. In fact, our next story, this company is not accounting according to cash. It's these are things worth noticing.
Worth noticing indeed. Corey, what is your next drill down?
Let's look at Lovesack, baby. Lovesack.
Yeah, that's the song that keeps going in my head every time I see that name. Lovesack.
It has been ringing in my head. Full disclosure, before we even talk about the price, I came into this day short this stock. I covered a little bit today. And I normally don't talk about my own investments, but I spent so much time working in this today, and I thought it was worth sharing the story. So it's not investment advice. You'd be a fool to follow my investment advice. I don't give investment advice, but I want to tell you a little bit of the story of Lovesac that was revealed today.
Lovesac trades with the ticker L-O-V-E with a market cap of about $320 million. Shares were down 10% in the last week, and most of that on Thursday when the stock dropped 11%. So for the last 12 months, shares are down 25%. So what is the story with Lovesac?
A ticker like L-O-V, what's not to love? And yes, the market didn't love it today. Company came out with earnings that missed expectations. Their guidance was suggesting that growth will be possibly single digit in the next year in the top line. And it was disappointing for this company that has been very bullish about things in recent times. Their gross margins, however, were really strong, 57%. These guys sell, again, I don't want to be overly critical, but I am short the stock. So please take everything I say with a grain of salt. You should anyway. But I just want our listeners, viewers to understand where my bias might lie. Lovesac sells beanbag chairs, and they sell sectional couches on, that are kind of low end in terms of price that they call sactionals. It's actually kind of funny, but so they sell Lovesacs. They sell big beanbag chairs and sactionals out of their branded stores. They also have a deal with Costco where they sell some of these things, and they're facing some competition. And in their sector, things are getting worse. They say they're doing better than the sector, which is declining. But these disappointing results suggested otherwise. Nonetheless, they've got really fantastic gross margins of 57%, which makes you wonder if all they sell is a beanbag chair, why are their margins so high, their gross margins so high? And the CFO, their new CFO, Keith Singer, Signer is how you pronounce his name, he became CFO last year, so they've changed CFOs recently. Another thing that I like to look for when I'm looking for companies that I might not want to own. Indeed, he was asked about gross margins at the conference call today when the investors are trying to figure out what's going on with this company and why were these results worse than the analysts expected. Well, here's what Keith Signer had to say.
So the story for first quarter gross margins is really consistent with kind of what we've been talking about the last 6 months and with the full year. You know, we got to this high 50s range. We think this is a comfortable level. Last year's first quarter was still burdened by a little bit of the capitalized inbound freight that hadn't burned off as of then. That's helping us a little bit year over year in first quarter. We do expect gross margin expansion for this year. Obviously, the total top line will impact that range that you saw within our guidance that we provided. But there's a few things Mary was talking about that have the potential to benefit both the inbound and outbound side of freight and logistics for us. You know, even in first quarter, we had been getting some questions in relation to, you know, whether it's Red Sea, whether it's Baltimore, all that kind of stuff. Just to put some of this stuff into context, you know, as we moved into P12 and P1, we've really changed some of the relationships we have. We moved to direct service providers for ocean freight and container drayage using a beneficial cargo owner direct carrier model. That's definitely impacting things for us. We're also moving on an outbound side into evaluating some alternative options for last mile carrier projects and tests. All the stuff we think has potential to benefit the gross margin side of things.
So you heard that phrase, capitalized inbound freight. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this company capitalizes some freight costs. It takes a cost of shipping something and capitalizes it over time. I did a search of all of the SEC filings that are searchable of all time, of all companies ever. And there are only 14 mentions of capitalized freight, 10 of them from this company. So it is a unique phrase, possibly a unique accounting treatment that they are still using. And it didn't factor at all into the results today. Although I guess theoretically, if they have capitalized freight costs and spread them out over time, as opposed to just expensing them in a single time, like every other company does, they would have higher expenses and lower profits. I don't know, lower gross profits, at least. Possibly lower operating profits. I don't know. Nonetheless, it was a quarter that was disappointing to Lovesac. But somewhere else, people were singing Lovesac, baby. Lovesac.
I'm sure they were.
All right, well, coming up, we've got a really interesting interview with Braze, CEO Bill Magnuson. Really compelling guy, and I had a lot of fun with this interview. that I did a couple of days ago, talking about this company that has been doing all kinds of things with machine learning and AI for many, many years, long before they were AI, before AI was cool. We've got that interview right after this.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Era. Never miss another critical events or insight ever. With Era, customize your company watch list and track key events, mentions, filings, and more. All within an easy-to-use, customizable interface. That's Era, AIERA.com.
All right, welcome back to the Drill Down Podcast. We're joined right now by Bill Magnuson. He is the CEO of Braze. Sounds like it ought to be like a company that makes charcoal grills or something, but no.
No. It's Braze, A-Z-E. It's a company that should be making welding equipment.
Duly noted. And yet you're not.
If we are not, no.
We quickly descend into buzzwords when we talk about what your company does, but I think it's absolutely fascinating what your company does. How do you describe it?
So we describe it as a customer engagement platform. And then, you know, to your point about buzzwords, I pretty quickly drill back down and say that, you know, what we literally do is that our software integrates into our customers' mobile apps, websites, connected fitness products, connected TVs, et cetera. And then there's two aspects to it. One of them is listening to the customer as they're moving through their journey. So it's a, you know, analytics and instrumentation to be able to know what they're using, what they're interested in, what they're ignoring, et cetera. And then the other side is messaging, which is to be able to literally send messages, things like push notifications, email, SMS, WhatsApp messages, surveys, you know, in-app messaging, et cetera, as well as actually modify the product experience itself through capabilities like feature flags or our webhooks product. And, you know, Braze's magic really lives higher up the stack than that, which is that we have very sophisticated orchestration capability, experimentation capability, and relevance engines, which allow for you to marry together the data feed that's coming in from the customer activity in the product, and then, you know, orchestrate the right actions from a messaging and a product modification standpoint in order to achieve goals like converting, you know, casual users to habitual ones, to be able to push people toward subscriptions, to be able to avoid churn, to be able to promote new content and drive additional usage and attachment, all those good things that we basket into engagement.
Companies that have described similar things to me over the years seem like they get stuck on a platform. They're an email content marketing platform, or they're a messaging, text messaging, content platform, messaging platform, but they're in these silos of the medium, not the message.
Totally. Yeah. And it's definitely creates that, you know, the classic, if you've got a hammer, everything looks like a nail problem. And we talk about that a lot, where there's a lot of organizations who, as the customer has become multi-channel, of course, over time, you know, they're not interested in the fact that you have a separate email from SMS, from push notification tool. When those channels are operating in a disjoint fashion, they're getting a disjoint experience, and it's annoying. It's not relevant. It's not personalized. It's much less likely to break through the noise that we have nowadays, and it's going to turn people off. They're going to unsubscribe or uninstall your app, and it's going to lead to you losing the right or the privilege to be able to communicate with them. And so Braze actually started from the very beginning at the, you know, kind of the higher level heart of the problem, which is that when we bring together the activity feed, the context around the customer, and the business strategies, out of those should come some decisions around, you know, when are we going to talk to people? When we do, which of our many business priorities are we going to try to optimize for? Once we've done that, you know, there's a certain content set that's going to help us communicate that message. And then we combine those things together to then determine which channel we should be in.
Well, I don't want to call bullshit on that, but I've heard you do interviews where you said you've thought of you wanted to start with a mobile first company, which does sound like, in some ways, you were thinking about the medium again, and I'm interested in how you got from there to what you're describing now, which seems much more holistic. I wonder if there was a moment when you're like, oh, we can do this everywhere.
Well, the very first launch of Braze actually had four channels in it. So within mobile, where our early customers were mobile apps, we actually had mobile push notifications. We had in-product interstitials. We had an in-product persistent feed, which we called the news feed, which was before the Facebook news feed. So I used to describe that as a mini blog inside your app. And then we also had email. And so from that, actually, we had messaging that was pushed by its nature, which means I decide when I'm sending it to you, like with push and email. We had messaging that was pulled by its nature and integrated into the product. So the system needs to be able to respond to the customer whenever they happen to show up and actually then integrate into the product experience, which has higher latency requirements because, you know, you might be used to refreshing your inbox and waiting a few seconds for an email or an SMS to arrive, but you certainly aren't going to put up with a few second latency or freezing inside of a mobile app. So the system needed to be created to deal with a lot of different content richness. When we were in a mobile app experience, we had to match the native styling. You know, when you're in a push notification or an email, you've got totally different formats over there, push versus pull. And then, of course, it all needed to be able to respond to the user in the moment, because one of the things about mobile is that, like, yes, it is a platform, but importantly, the mobile customer can show up at any time, right? The customer journey is on their terms. And so if you're going to build software that's going to be able to be a companion to that journey, you need to be able to fluidly move from one channel to the next. You need to be able to respond in the moment as the user shows up. And so our first product, yeah, we were focused on the mobile apps as our early customers, but we had four different messaging channels. They covered a bunch of different dimensions in terms of, you know, liveness requirements, content richness, targeting, et cetera. And it was always part of a real-time event-driven stream processor to be able to process that context in real time.
So in your most recent quarterly report, I told you I didn't want to talk about the quarter, and here I am mentioning a report, but you cite customers, and it struck me that a lot of customers in the press release, and it struck me that that must be really useful for you to say to a potentially new customer, hey, look at all these names you've heard of that use Braze. And one of the customers, well, I'll let you pick a customer to describe how they use it. Although if you want to talk about Wendy's, I'm curious, because the Wendy's Twitter account, which you may or may not be aware of, is insanely on point with its customer base. And I feel like they've really got a marketing team that really knows what they're doing there and is willing to take chances. And I wonder, but whatever the customer, talk to me about how some customer might be using your services to go across all these channels to communicate with their customers.
Yeah, sure. If you'll let me kind of dive into the diversification of our customer base, I think it's really interesting in seeing just how many use cases Braze is utilized for. But I think it's also an important part of the founding of the business, which is that we're working on a problem, which I think is pretty fundamental to capitalism, which is if you're going to build a long-term business, you need to have strong relationships with your customers. And in order for you to build strong relationships, we go to the very human concept of, you know, when you meet someone, you should pay attention to them. You should listen closely, you know, look for cues and context around it to be able to then inform your future interactions. And if you do a good job of that, you'll have relevant and engaging interactions with that person and you'll build a relationship. So we're trying to help, you know, businesses of all kinds do exactly that with each one of their customers as individuals. So when we look out across the different verticals, you know, I'll start with things like fitness and learning and education. These are places where people actually want to develop habits, but they have a hard time, you know, sticking to it. So we work with companies like AllTrails, Equinox, SoulCycle, Peloton, learning and education. You know, you're looking at companies like Quizlet and Course Hero. We can move over to financial services, and we work with companies like Intuit and TurboTax. Sorry for that reminder, the tax day is coming up, as well as Venmo, obviously known for peer-to-peer payments, but more recently has expanded into kind of full service financial services offerings. Also looking at online retail, pick another name that's been in the news. We were talking about meme stocks just a little bit ago, but Bed Bath & Beyond, or previously Overstock.com, has been a customer for a really long time. Others like Wine.com and Mercari. We also work across gaming. You know, we got March Madness right now. And so love to point out that we work with both DraftKings and FanDuel.
Well, and I should warn you, we'll probably run this interview a lot closer to tax day. So, but yes.
Yeah, so it'll be like an emergency alarm bell.
So we won't say that you picked Illinois to beat UConn or anything.
I'm not going to make any predictions.
No, please. So continue. So this notion that you've got really different kinds of customers. But I guess what I'm thinking about is more the individual customer journey across different, I use the phrase silos, so I'll use it again, and how you've got this ability to sort of target marketing messages that reach a person where they is and where they are at the moment that they're likely to receive a message.
I think it's also important to realize that, you know, the sending of a message is not the end point, right? There's a lot of the marketing infrastructure and a lot of the kind of CPaaS space are all about fire and forget. It's like, okay, I have something I want to say to someone, let me just send it to them. And that misses the point where you then listen and you observe and you see how they respond to it. And, you know, a very simple example is like someone clicks on an email and it deep links them into a mobile application, right? As soon as they get there, you now have some context from how they engaged with the message that you sent them via email that the mobile application should be, you know, should be aware of and should be modifying some aspect of either the content or the experience there. in order for you to do that, you need to have, you know, let's go back to the silo part of the conversation. If your email software is running in a silo that's separate from what your how your mobile app is rendering itself, you're not going to be able to get that context from that click into the mobile app fast enough to be able to have that be a coherent, connected experience. And then someone might go from, you know, making a, I didn't get down to the bottom of my, you know, rattling off all the customers. We have a lot in the delivery space. You know, Wendy's is another great example where in the QSR space, when people do things like scheduling takeout or delivery or other forms of orders, a lot of times they then move into the messaging side. So you go from having been in an email or a push notification brings you into a mobile application, you complete an order, and then we're going to follow the order through SMS or WhatsApp or what have you, right? You're moving across these channels pretty quickly. And to be able to have the messaging experience be cognizant of where you are in the journey, how you're responding, even making decisions like, hey, I'm updating you on your delivery. And if you're incessantly like refreshing the mobile app, like every 5 seconds, checking on that, I probably don't need to send you any SMS about it, right? Like that'll, at a minimum, it's going to save me money, but it's also going to keep me from cluttering up your inbox in multiple places when you already have the information. And so even during that customer journey, to be able to adapt to how the customer is behaving in the moment is super helpful. And then you also have similar things like, you know, maybe the order gets delayed in delivery. You probably want to test things like, all right, if it's delayed an estimated 5 minutes, do I just not say anything and then I move on? Or do I send an apology in advance? And then afterward, I could decide like, hey, should I send them a like, hey, rate your delivery, or should I just kind of let it be and just send an apology, right? And not ask them for another thing like responding to it. And with Braze, what you can do is you can actually map out these different types of, you know, journeys and different approaches to being a companion to that journey. And then see like, hey, how did this impact the repeat ordering 3 weeks or 6 weeks or 12 weeks later, you know, really looking at long-term impacts of how did my behaviors in that moment affect the relationship with the customer and whether or not they, I became a more trusted part of their life and they came back, et cetera.
It's so almost like
a lot of decisions that are made along the way, content, timing, channel, et cetera.
It's like almost like ERP software, like in a manufacturing floor. Like if this happens, there's these two options. And if that happens, there's these three options. But for messaging, it's really interesting.
Yeah, in the B2C journey, for sure. Yeah, that's and you know, I think that humans moving through their day to day with their mobile devices are a lot more unpredictable than your factory assembly line, for sure.
I have to say that I was, when I was doing some work on the way in this morning and thinking about our conversation, I was reminded that it was my great grandmother's birthday today in 1899. And I was thinking about the world in which she lived and then what you guys do. And in some ways, there's some similarity because you're sort of sitting on top of, you know, so many years of developing, I don't know, for lack of a better phrase, like internet communications, whether it's SMS or email or people witnessing an app or watching something on a TV or whatever, suddenly all coming together to treat the customer as a human. Wherever they are, right back to 1899, where the only way you could talk to them is as a human.
Yep. Yeah. And to be able to do so also in markets that are much larger than have ever existed before. You know, we have over 6 billion monthly active users on the platform. If you combine together the customer bases of all of our 2000 plus customers. And when you look at the spread of smartphones, it is a technology that is more widely deployed than anything that has come before it, including, you know, clean water and electricity, and also even including literacy to be able to read what's on the phone, right? Like these are incredibly accessible devices that have permeated every corner of the globe in human society. And they're increasingly becoming a part of like our day-to-day lives from a product and service and relationship and communication standpoint in more things every year. And when we look at the implications of that digitization of the relationship, it creates these incredible opportunities for brands to be able to not just be a part of our lives, but also to, you know, depending on the product or service, especially if it's digital, to be far more global than ever before. And that means that actually the diversity of a customer base that a brand might have, even in the early days of launching its product or service, is far greater than anything that came before it. So you go back to the 1899 example, and people always talk about, you know, the clerk at the general store who gets to know you or whatever. But guess what? Like in his town, it was a bunch of people that were pretty homogenous, right? Almost by definition. Right. Like the challenge of today is so much more substantial because you're working across so many different languages and cultures and socioeconomic realities and different personas. And as you're a growing business, those personas, you know, expand and grow over time, and you expand your own product surface area, and that leads to other changes. And so that ability to even know and understand how your customer base is evolving and what the diversity across it looks like to even begin to try to address it in that way is incredibly difficult. You know, then you add to that all the global competition that that implies, because of course, if you can do that from New York, anybody anywhere in the world can do it, you know, and compete in your market as well. And so you have this great opportunity, but it's a tough challenge and it's got a lot of competition.
It would seem to me also you talk in your conference calls and in your releases and SEC filings about upsell. And it would seem to me that one of the things that happens is your customers start to use your product. Indeed, when you look at in your financials, your RPOs, your remaining performance obligations, they tend to be, a lot of companies will report 3 years or 4 year RPOs, of which a quarter are in the next year. Almost all of yours, or a large substantial majority of yours, are in the next year, which suggests that your customers are on the hook for a shorter period of time. Yes, but it also means you must confidently be able to upsell them and let them get into that customer experience to realize, whoa, we've got a much bigger task ahead of us and a greater opportunity ahead of us that we can see through the use of Braze.
That is exactly right. And that's a really good way to read the RPO, CRPO, because we are highly confident in our ability to continue to grow customers once we acquire them.
Your net dollar retention shows that.
Yep. And they expand into new use cases, new lines of business, their own product expands, their own customer base expands, they expand into new geographies. We add more to our product. So there's a bunch of net new channels that we add. And a lot of times also, to your point, we'll go in and we'll actually start on one or two channels, and then they might have three or four other channel specific point solutions, and we'll consolidate those out over time. And so we actually purposely, you know, if a customer really wants to sign a longer 3, 4, 5 year contract, we can accommodate that. But we don't try to push toward those long-term contracts, because we know that there are actually benefits on the Braze side to be able to kind of revisit that contract conversation more often.
Such an interesting company, interesting time. And I appreciate your time, Bill Magnuson, CEO of Braze.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. Coming up next on the Drill Down to the Bite, one number that tells us a whole lot.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Futurum Group, where analysts, researchers, advisors, content creators, and marketing experts help business leaders anticipate and understand shifts in their industries and build strategies to leverage disruptive innovation. With deep analysis, Futurum Group's extensive industry experience delivers reliable research and data, thought leadership, and actionable advice to help you with your strategy and go-to-market efforts. Futurum Group.
All right, we're back with a Drill Down Bite, one number that tells us a whole lot. Ben, this is probably the biggest bite we've ever had, maybe ever will have.
All right.
And you've seen the graphics that I put up on our Instagram account, at Drill Down Pod, and on Twitter, at Corey TV, and at Drill Down Pod. So the graphic has more zeros on it than any number I've ever put on that graphic. But the number is 2,600,000,000,000. Braze software has helped its customers initiate 2,600,000,000,000 messages or other Canvas actions in calendar year 2023. So expectations of even more. They're managing all of those messages and trying to get customers where they are. Interesting company.
It's a wildly large number. Interesting company.
Indeed. All right. All right. Well, thanks for listening to Futurum's The Drill Down. I'm Corey Johnson, Ben Wilson, our fabulous co-host, and of course, our editor extraordinaire. The Drill Down's a production of 6-5 Media.